Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And this week on Divine Intervention, we are trying another wine from the Cape, one of the areas, unfortunately, which was touched by the recent fires. But nonetheless, we have a wine which was made before it had too much of a smoky odour on the nose. And indeed, I hope it'll be very good. It's from the Groot Constantia estate. We will get details of the wine in a sec. Just to let you all know, down in the Cape, we have our food and wine guru, award-winning Michael Olivier. Hello, Michael. How are your awards?
All good.
Excellent. And we're always privileged to have her with us, a Cape wine master, Debbie van Flymen from Wine Cellar. Lovely to have you back. First time this year, I think.
It is. Thank you for having me.
And, of course, to Jeremy Sampson, who is of no fixed abode, but always welcome to pop up here for a free drink.
John, always a pleasure.
And a newcomer, although he was actually the person who set up all the technology so we could do these podcasts. From Tessos, we have George Mancharov. George, great to have you with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's a great, great pleasure. Just wait till you see the bill. Okay, Michael Olivier, it's a Groot Constantia white. What is it and what can you tell us about it?
Well, it's the Groot Constantia Semillon Sauvignon Blanc blend of the 2014 vintage. One of my sort of favorite white blends, 60% Semillon and then 40% Sauvignon Blanc. It's hand-picked grapes straight down into the cellar, light pressing, cold fermentation, and just left on the lees for 3 months to build that middle palate and the lovely sort of creaminess. I find if you get it up to your nose, it's just a total mélange of tropical fruit. There's granadilla there, pineapple, lovely melon and mangoes, and just a little grind of white pepper. And then on the palate, all those tropical fruit flavors come through. And then, of course, you've got that lovely sort of squirt of lime on the aftertaste. Nice, long, gently waning aftertaste. It's brilliant now as a young wine, but it's a wine that really will grow over the next couple of years.
And just for the benefit of any non-South African listeners, granadilla, of course, is passion fruit in the rest of the world. Wonderful ingredient in any fruit salad, and that's my recipe tip for the day. Well, Michael, I am thoroughly enjoying this. As you know, I don't like wines which are too acidic or too aggressive, and this white, I think, is beautifully balanced. The Semillon, I think I'm right in saying, is a grape that one sees more and more of in South Africa. Bravo. Yep. Nice blend with the Sauvignon Blanc. It's maybe toned it down a little bit. I am enjoying this. It's a quality wine. Thank you for introducing us to it. But as usual, what do I know? We turn to our master or mistress of Cape. Well, no, that's a bit too 50 shades of grey, isn't it? To our Cape wine master, Debbie van Flymen. Debbie, are you enjoying it?
I am very much enjoying what's in this glass. I think they've made a beautifully balanced wine. I love that overwhelming granadilla character and the waxiness from that Semillon. It's got a really lovely weight on the palate. Perfect for drinking in these warm weather days that we're having. And I think they've made a cracker of a wine.
Jeremy Sampson. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, listening to Michael and Debbie, they've said it all about the wine because it's
gorgeous.
And I'm going to keep on warping, John, just for a second. But, you know, this is where I know people say you should have more and more blind tasting. But just to say Groot Constantia, immediately I was excited to know what the wine was going to taste like. And I'm not disappointed. And it's all the things that these two experts here have already said.
Well, thank you for saying nothing new, Jeremy. George.
Well, it's a very effortless wine, and I don't have the sophisticated palate, and I cannot be as good in describing. I just see opening lots and lots of bottles of this with a party, and it will go down easy. And it's a great wine. I like it. I love it.
Well, George, as you know, these aren't pretentious wine tastings. You say if you like it, if you don't like it.
I do.
That is enough for me and for many of our listeners. We have one or two wafflers. We have Debbie and Michael and so on, and Jeremy is a sort of half waffler when he gets in first. But the whole aim of these tastings is just to give the stuff a try and see if we like it. Michael Olivier, standard question. I would very happily sip this, even on a very hot day. It's a reasonably heavy wine, but not aggressively so. But I think this would be a superb wine with all sorts of food. Give us some examples.
Look, I think the sort of the obvious route would be the sort of calamari, a nice sort of salt and pepper calamari, nice crispy crust on it with a tartar sauce or something like that. Prawns just flash fried in butter in a pan with some lemon and parsley. And then I think it would do quite well with goat cheese as well, on a bruschetta maybe with a little of that Morgenstern olive paste on it as well. Nice and crunchy sort of snacky thing to have while you're having a glass of wine like this. Because this is a big glass, and I think you just need a little bit of food to go with it just to balance it off a bit.
Well, certainly after the third or fourth bottle, you might need something other than liquid in your stomach. Debbie?
I totally agree with those choices, Michael. I think maybe I would also choose to go for something like a smoked chicken salad, something that kind of complements this. I really love the slightly salty finish that it has. I think the winemaker, Bulle Gerber, is doing a phenomenal job with this, and it's got a really nice limey finish that stays with you. Limey as in fresh limes.
Yeah.
Smoked chicken, excellent idea. I think roast chicken, Michael, why not? We tend to have these categories which people stick to. You have red wine with meat and white wine with fish and so on. But I think this would go very well, particularly on a warm day or even with a chicken salad.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're roasting a chicken, lovely thing to do is to mix half butter and goat cheese and herbs and push it in under the skin of the breast. And if you roast that on a Weber outside, it's just brilliant.
Now I'm hungry again. Jeremy, any gastronomic ideas, or are you in too late again?
John, last night we had the privilege at home of my youngest daughter cooking us and I've got to get it right, I think it was goat's cheese and onions and tomatoes on puff pastry. So it was a tartlet, as it were. And this would have been brilliant with it. I have to say what we drank did pretty well as well. But this would be perfect. It cuts through. As you say, this is quite a heavyish white wine, but it's full of complexities, and it certainly lingers in a most pleasant way on the palate.
Well, just like me, heavy but full of complexities. George, well, any thoughts? I know you like your grub.
I do, but I can see a few bottles of this wine going down before the food is served, even, because it's quite nice on its own. And if I had to serve it with something, I'll probably put it after dinner, with after the cheese board.
Well, Michael, staying on the food and wine and coffee theme, I decided not to tip in my local coffee shop this morning because the service was so appalling. Yet one finds that many restaurants automatically put a service charge on a bill. I know you've run a restaurant very successfully in the past. Do you have any thoughts about mean buggers like me who refuse to pay for more than the food and wine if the service has been really third rate?
I applaud them for not adding service. I think if the service doesn't meet the standard, then why tip?
Carry on, Michael. Apologies for interrupting.
I quite often will give a standard 10% tip and say to the waiter, you know, if you've been a little bit sparkier, you might have got a bit more. Because I tend generally to tip around about 15%. Having been a waiter, having worked with waiters, I know what a really hard job it is. But I think if you screw it up, then you don't deserve a tip.
And of course, the last time we had dinner, we actually bought a bottle or two of our own to share in a very nice restaurant. And I deliberately made sure that the tip reflected what we would have paid for the wine as well as what we did pay for the food. Because obviously, if a waiter is helping you by serving your own wine, that is something that should be recognised.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Debbie, any thoughts on this?
I totally agree with what Michael has said, and I would go maybe a little bit further to say that here in South Africa, I think that waiters don't often have a perception of their job as a career, and rather they see it as a temporary kind of assignment. And I think that in many places overseas, being in the service industry is seen as a career choice. So I always do start at that point of about 10%, and I deduct if the service is below average, and I go upwards if the service is fantastic. And I think that if you let people know that that's how you are going to treat your dining experience, you have a far more positive experience.
George, I know that you spend quite a lot of time in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
It's a country where obviously sommeliers don't have much of a career,
but
I know you also travel around the world.
Right.
Any ideas from you on how one should treat really good service or really bad service?
Well, one thing I don't understand is why would tip would be considered if you haven't received, if you didn't get the service. If you don't get the service, I mean, the whole idea of the tip is I'm happy with being served. And if somebody expects it, and I have to say that probably one of the most appalling cases I had was here in a prestigious restaurant where I was chased and asked, why didn't you pay? Oh, because my langoustines were overdone, well overdone and smelly, and that's why. That's on the case of Saudi Arabia. Not only Simeon doesn't make it there, but bacon.
Oh, I know where I'm not going for my next holidays. Jeremy Sampson, your turn to tell us how mean or how generous you are.
Well, I was shocked. I think the first time I went to New York, when you go into say a restaurant in Central Park, and you find at the bottom they've added a tip and they ask you for another tip for the maitre or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, the way it's layered on, and it can actually get quite significant. I still like it when you actually can still go into a restaurant and cash changes hands. Now, I've certainly seen it in London and New York where my host has actually handed out some paper, you know, as a note to say thank you for the service. But I tend to average around the 10%, but again, as Michael, Debbie and George are saying, you might go up, but you might go down, and very occasionally you might do nothing at all. And I think in South Africa especially, we need to tell people if they're actually screwing up and therefore give them nothing.
Well, I remember one occasion in your part of the world, Michael. I was having dinner with some friends and had rather too much wine and forgot to tip. And instead of dragging me to one side and saying, was there a problem with the service, sir, or did we let you down in any way? Discreetly, the guy came up to the table, the waiter, and said, you didn't tip. To which I replied with a word that begins with F, and he didn't get his tip. Presumably, having run restaurants, Michael, you are aware that sometimes customers will be a bit distracted and may intend to reward good service, but just forget. Is there not a good argument for whoever is in charge at the restaurant having a discreet word with the customer instead of embarrassing them in front of a group of friends?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think, you know, if the customer has paid the bill and he's gone or going, I would just leave it alone. Quite often the customer will, as you say, tip separately. And then if it's a biggish party, people will come the next day. And with us anyway, I mean, that was the way we did it, that people would come the next day and pay their whole bill, and then the tip would be added on. But, you know, if a customer doesn't tip, then I don't want him to feel hounded to make a tip.
That's a very good idea, Mike. I think I'm going to follow that advice. I'm going to go for a very lavish meal and then emigrate the next day. Jeremy Sampson, just going back to that, you're obviously an expert on branding, reputation, all those things. Is it not dangerous for a restaurant to be aggressive with a customer who has made, in my case, what was not a dishonest mistake, but an honest mistake?
John, I think it was Raymond Ackerman of Pick and Pay fame who once said he didn't want a client, a housewife or whatever, who came in and bought a basketful. He wanted a trolley full, and he wanted them for life. And I think this is where, with any restaurateur, you want repeat customers. They might not be able to afford or come back too often, but you want to keep the relationship. And to build the relationship, you have to have a mutual respect, yes. Some people will be a little bit otherwise, but I always believe that, you know, in our lives, we want to keep the relationships and keep an understanding together. And I think in the restaurant business, as Mike is saying, you want people to come back. And if you hand them out of the place, they won't come back. And there are plenty of other choices. The competition is immense at the moment.
George, your thoughts?
I have to say on the positive that I had some very good service in South Africa. I've been in Stellenbosch and in Cape Town, as well as here in Johannesburg, where I've seen very good service. And the other thing I want to say is that going to a bistro in Paris or a classy Michelin star restaurant somewhere, I expect different service, and it's normal. But a customer would, and I would definitely feel when I'm being treated bad, and I'll never go there again. It's very simple. Leave alone not giving a tip. I won't give a tip.
I agree. We often vote with our feet.
Yeah.
We won't go back to a place that has given us service that we feel is less than what we expected. But I think you're 100% right, George. It's really important to have different levels of expectation based on where the sort of establishment to which we're going. I have to say, I had phenomenal service at a very small restaurant in one of the Joburg suburbs this week, and I rewarded it with a larger than average tip. And I will definitely go back as a result. So there are some wonderful success stories, and there are some people here who take their jobs very seriously and want people to enjoy the experience of dining out.
And I would go so far as to say, sometimes I want to book a table where the waiter, and you name the waiter, is going to be on duty.
Absolutely.
Because I've been to some top restaurants, fun enough, Rick Stein's in Padstow, which I've been to a couple of times. The waiter last time there was absolutely superb. And I'd like to go back and say, is Nick on duty tonight, please? Because I'd like him. His knowledge was huge, and he was helping and gentle, and that was the wine and the food and the pairing.
As opposed to me, who would say, is Nick on duty? Because I didn't tip him last time, and he's going to spit in my soup. Just before we conclude this conversation, Michael, I'll give you an example of where I gave a generous tip for very bad service. It was the first time I went to the recently opened Bistro Michel in the Bluebird Centre in Joburg. Michel Morand, I know, has done some very good food in his previous incarnations, and I wanted to try it. The waiter was absolutely terrible. I'll give you a few examples. He took our order and then came back and said one of the dishes wasn't available. He should have known that in advance. We got our main course before our starter, another rather bad bit of service. There was one problem with one of the dishes, which I don't think was resolved very well. I ended up paying for it. So I gave a good tip because I don't think the guy should be penalised for being badly trained. I then vowed never to go back, and I then had second thoughts because I thought, this is somebody who does good food. I must give his restaurant a second chance, and I did give it a second chance. Indeed, George and I went in for a very pleasurable lunch. The food was good, the service was excellent, and thanks to a certain chap in the Cape, we ordered the right wine as well for the second time. So thank you for that, Michael. Michael, as we round up this conversation, we've meandered quite a bit about service and tips and so on. Do you have any final thoughts on this?
I think the thing is that you've got to take it as it comes, and each one on its own merits. The tip will vary according to the excellence of the service that you get, the knowledge of the waiter, the personality of the waiter. Absolutely. I think it's a movable feast.
And if anyone wants to tip me for this podcast, my email address is on the website. Thank you very much indeed, Michael Olivier, for introducing us to the Groot Constantia Semillon Sauvignon Blanc 2014. An excellent choice, one that I will certainly look out for before you've given us all a very good tip in a different sense of the word. Lovely chatting to you.
Thanks, John.
And to our Joburg studio audience, let's not do ladies first, because we believe in democracy and equal rights in this place. George Mancheroff, thank you very much for your first appearance.
I hope we
can get you back soon.
Thank you.
Jeremy Sampson, no danger of you not coming back soon, I hope.
None at all, John. I'll be right here when we have especially stunners like this.
That's a very nice thing to say about Debbie and I. Debbie van Vlaanderen from Wine Cellar, great that we could get you back again this year.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm John Fraser. That was Divine Intervention.